This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. For Wednesday, September 17th, I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, we'll hear about an aggressive recycling program taken up by the City of Toronto after it originally was shipping its garbage into the U.S. We'll also have a look at your forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, today's news. There's been a second civil lawsuit stemming from the child molestation case of former Urbana grade school teacher John White. The suit names White, as well as current and former school officials in both Urbana and Normal. He's serving a 60-year prison sentence after pleading guilty earlier this year. Charges involve 8 students in Urbana and 2 at a grade school in Normal. Attorney Ellen Bullock says administrators there did what they could to cast White off rather than address the problem. And Urbana's school district ignored the same incidents when he came to Thomas Paine Elementary School.
So they threw him off purposely and intentionally, saying, let's get him out of here. They threw the hot potato. Urbana caught it, and Urbana on their side, there were tons of red flags. There was every reason on earth to question his fitness to teach.
Bullock filed the suit in Champaign County Circuit Court. Her first lawsuit was filed in federal court in July. Each represents one of White's victims and their families. The latest suit carries 30 separate charges and seeks $1 million in damages for each of them, but a jury will determine actual amounts. 3 additional lawsuits are expected within the next few days. Meanwhile, 3 former Urbana school administrators are expected back in court next month. They're facing misdemeanor charges for failing to report suspected child abuse or neglect and have pleaded not guilty. A spokesman for Governor Rod Blagojevich says the governor will consider a vote by a panel of state lawmakers against a plan to close a central Illinois prison. The Bipartisan Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability has voted 9-0 against the governor's plan to close the Pontiac Correctional Center. The vote isn't binding. Governor's spokesman Brian Williamson would only say the governor will take the vote under advisement. Meanwhile, State Senator Dan Rutherford of Pontiac says it's a significant act, even though the governor is not bound by it.
The General Assembly has now gone on record of having taken an objective analysis with regards to overcrowding of the correctional system and the net negative economic impact to Illinois if the Pontiac correctional system were to close.
Governor Blagojevich has said he wants to close the prison and save more than $8 million the next 2 years, moving the state's 1,650 inmates to the unopened state prison at Thompson. The state has a $2 billion budget shortfall, but people around Pontiac, which would lose about 570 jobs, believe the move is about politics. Rutherford says he's looking forward to working with the governor to find a way to open the Thompson facility while also keeping the Pontiac prison open. The argument over releasing subpoena records from Governor Rod Blagojevich's office was aired in front of University of Illinois law students yesterday. AM 580's Tom Rogers has more.
The Better Government Association used Illinois' Freedom of Information Act to request the federal subpoenas, which are part of an ongoing corruption investigation. A trial court judge ordered them released, and the governor appealed. His attorney, Tom Londrigan, says a letter from the U.S. Attorney's Office strongly requested the subpoenas not be made public. He also told the 3 appellate court judges there's nothing in previous law to allow the FOIA request to stand.
It's a case without precedent and a request under the federal FOIA, to my knowledge, that has never been made before.
Don Craven, who represented the BGA, says a request to withhold the subpoenas isn't enough according to the law, which lets prosecutors keep documents from being released if it would hinder their investigation.
If the U.S. attorney thinks that that federal law prohibits the release of something or would interfere with something that they've got going, they know how to come in and say, don't do that. And they didn't do that.
Both sides expect a ruling from the court in the next 2 months. Every year, the appellate court meets at the U of I College of Law to hear 1 or 2 cases before law students. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
The new budget approved by the Urbana School Board last night has a deficit, but District 116 officials say that's only on paper. The District 116 School Board voted unanimously last night to approve the $55.8 million spending plan, retroactive to July 1st. Its revenues fall $1.8 million short of spending. But district spokesman Mark Schultz says $800,000 of that is due to a worst-case budget scenario submitted by Finance Director Carol Baker. He says the budget assumes a far gloomier spending and revenue picture than is likely to occur.
Those numbers will improve, or should improve, hopefully will improve, as the fiscal year goes on. And in fact, in the last 5 years, the school district has ended its fiscal year with either a balanced budget or a budget surplus.
And Schultz says those earlier budget pictures also started with deficits due to worst-case budgeting. Schultz says another $1 million appears as red ink in the new Urbana school budget because the district already has the money on hand. That money was realized in the form of construction revenue bonds before the current fiscal year began. It's been kept in reserve for spending this year, but isn't listed as new revenue. Champaign City Council approved a routine purchase of small trucks last night, but what's not routine is that one of the trucks will be retrofitted to run on compressed natural gas. AM 580's Jim Meadows has that story.
The city of Champaign buys and disposes of trucks on a regular schedule each year, but this year they plan to convert one of their new trucks to run on compressed natural gas, or CNG. The conversion costs $12,000 to $17,000 per vehicle, but is expected to cut fuel costs by one-third. Administrative Services Manager Elizabeth Hannon says the city should save money in the long run.
In terms of life cycle costs, we think in most cases it'll be a better solution. And in terms of the more expensive long-term solution for fueling, we're going to be looking for federal and state grants to do that.
Hannon says they hope to obtain grant money to set up a CNG fueling station. There are currently none in Champaign-Urbana. She says they'll be talking with the city of Urbana and the University of Illinois about teaming up for that project. Until that's done, the city may use smaller and slower fueling stations meant for owners of just one or two CNG vehicles. Besides the truck conversion, the city of Champaign plans to buy a CNG Honda Civic for city use sometime this year. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Champaign City Council voted last night to add $76,000 to the new $10 million parking deck being built downtown. Councilwoman Deb Finan says she couldn't understand why the expense wasn't included in the original budget because the money pays for amenities council members had wanted.
I don't know what happened and why it didn't get caught the first time around, but it's clearly an expense that should have been included and should be paid for.
City officials said the additional funding pays for equipment that will allow the deck to offer better customer service. With the equipment, people could swipe their debit or credit cards at the parking entrance and exit in lieu of using paper tickets. Also, the equipment would let downtown businesses validate parking. For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Foncher. Sometimes it takes a little public embarrassment to get on the right track. Back in 2000, the city of Toronto couldn't find a place to send its garbage, so it started trucking trash across the border to the U.S. Julie Grant reports that inspired Toronto to create one of the most aggressive recycling programs in North America.
Some days Toronto has sent as many as 150 trucks full of trash 300 miles to a landfill in the U.S. For those of you counting at home, that's 90,000 highway miles a day. That's not only bad for the environment. As gas prices have risen, it's also bad for Toronto's bottom line. But the bigger issue was Toronto wasn't taking care of its own trash. It wasn't even keeping it in Canada. It was trucking it to Michigan. And the people in Michigan, they didn't like it too much. They've complained about the stink of Toronto's trash for years. They even got the U.S. Congress to look at ways to stop it from crossing the border. But free trade even covers a commodity such as garbage. The people of Toronto are a little embarrassed by it all. David Ouellette looks perfectly pleased with the landscaping in his small lawn in East Toronto, but his eyes tilt downward when he's asked about shipping the city's waste to Michigan.
The downside of that is all those trucks whipping down the 401, and that can't be good for the environment to have lots of trucks burning gas and just getting it there.
But the city of Toronto had signed a contract with a Michigan landfill, so the trucks kept ripping down Highway 401, even as fuel costs got higher and higher. Jeff Rathbone is Toronto's general manager of solid waste. He says the contract is a dark cloud, but it got the city and residents on board with recycling.
The shipment to Michigan really became a wake-up call that allowed us to set very aggressive waste diversion targets and to realize that what we were actually shipping out of our country was really more of a resource than a waste.
Rathbone says Toronto set a tough goal to reduce the waste stream by 70%, and the city put up nearly a half billion dollars to do it. But a funny thing happened as they started increasing their recycling stream. Oil prices kept rising. That meant commodity prices kept rising too. So metals, plastics, and paper have started to gain real value. Recycling paid. And Toronto kept retooling its recycling program to make it really easy for people. On the east side of Toronto, Dick Wallet and his neighbors each have one of those huge cart-like garbage barrels, the ones with the handle and wheels. But it's not for trash, it's for recyclables. Jen Spence says it's much easier than it used to be.
For a while, it was very complicated. We had newspapers in one bin and glass and bottles and jars in another bin.
Now they just throw everything into that one big container and wheel it to the street. The city picks up and sorts the recyclables for free. It also picks up compost, you know, food waste. Spence takes out a small pail from under the kitchen sink to show me. It's latched shut.
This is the green bin. The City of Toronto sends this out to anyone who's going to be producing garbage. It collects flies really badly, and it's hard to keep clean, so they send out these bags that are perfectly fit for it. It's a nice size. It fills up pretty quick and doesn't stink. We used to have a huge garbage can, and now it's just that little guy that goes out every 2 weeks.
The city makes it kind of hard to take out regular trash, things that can't be recycled or composted. Like Spence said, it's only picked up twice a month, and now you have to pay as you throw. The more trash you make, the more you have to pay. Toronto has been able to cut the number of trucks headed to that landfill in Michigan by half, and it's moving toward its goal of reducing the waste stream by 70%. The city even plans to make energy out of the compost it's collecting. The city plans to generate electricity and eventually make a biofuel from the compost. That'll be used to run Toronto's trucks to the landfill. Oh, but those trucks won't be going to the landfill in Michigan. The city has finally found a Canadian landfill that will start taking Toronto's waste in 2010. For the Environment Report, I'm Julie Grant.
In our forecast for the region, sunny skies, the high around 78 today, clear skies tonight, the low around 50. Sunny skies tomorrow, the high around 75. Mostly clear tomorrow night, the low around 52. Sunny skies Friday, the high around 78. Mostly clear Friday night through Saturday night, with the lows around 55 degrees, highs around 80. Mostly sunny Sunday, with a high around 80 degrees. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Wednesday, September 17th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, wyll.illinois.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.